seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's Joe here. We've got Nathan there. Hello.
How are you?
And Fionn Davenport has made the time for us.
Hello.
Ooh, we need to turn you down.
Sorry.
Your deep, booming, manly voice next to our adolescent squeaks. So on the show this week, quite excitingly, I should tell the listeners, just to paint pictures, you won't see any of this clearly, but we're sitting in the new offtheball.com TV studio, and it really is a TV studio, and we'll be using this for Golf Weekly. We were just quite excitedly showing Fionn the possibilities now for Golf Weekly. We can have a putting mat right there, which we can incorporate. I don't know how people will watch. I guess Facebook Live will be the main way.
It'll be on Facebook Live. It'll be on YouTube.
YouTube's good.
Everywhere you watch things on your morning commute, I guess.
Mm-hmm. We should take a photograph and post it up.
Let's do that. We'll tweet a few pictures.
Unless it's all still top secret.
It could be top secret.
Oh, is it top secret?
In fact, I don't think we should even be talking about this right now.
Yeah. We're sitting in a darkened room.
Yeah. Nothing to see here.
No, it looks fantastic. It's going to be great. Yeah.
I was saying to Nathan just before we pressed record is that, you know, it's the love of the pod that kind of fuels your one's enthusiasm sometimes, particularly when you can't get studio time and you're scrambling around the office.
We are recording now on our trusty Zoom recorder because once again, we couldn't get studio space.
Yeah.
Now we'll have a studio every week.
Yeah.
But when you come in and, like, obviously I'd known that they've been building this for a little while, but this is my first time actually walking inside. And as I said to you, Nathan, this is like, it really is like a burst of energy. Like you go, okay, now there's amazing possibilities. So hopefully over the coming months, we'll be able to make it.
You've gone from the web.com tour to the PGA tour.
That's right. Yeah, but I'm a rookie here and I'm a bit nervous.
You're going to be the rookie of my year.
Oh. And we'll be the rookies in their ear.
The plan is, and maybe actually I shouldn't be saying this and making promises.
Okay.
The plan is that we will actually have a regular time that we'll go out on.
Live.
Every Thursday.
Okay.
That it will go out live every Thursday at a certain time.
What about people with jobs at, say, 1 o'clock on a Thursday?
Like us or our listeners?
Both. But more so them. They'll be able to get it for the rest of the
day. Once it's online, it's there forever, Joe.
That's true.
So you can watch it back.
As you know. Okay, so that's all to come, and we're going to have to iron out the details, and I guess it'll be a give and take process.
We need some golf memorabilia for our studio, don't we?
Oh,
and some free gear to wear on the telly.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, we were just saying,
what are we going to wear?
Do we wear the matching golf t-shirts?
Well, only, didn't we agree that only on majors?
We briefly agreed that. We suggested that, but I mean...
No, I think in majors, maybe we need to wear suits.
Oh, yeah. Suits on major week.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, if we could get someone to give us a load of money, what we could do is do, like, a live Sunday night of the Masters.
Oh, yeah.
3 years ago, I won the Christmas Scramble at Clontarf Golf Club, which you obviously remember.
Yeah.
So...
It's the big one.
The fifth major.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to bring that trophy in. I think my other half has chucked it, but I think I can...
Your girlfriend?
Yeah.
No, we'll have to decorate it. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's exciting times. So that's all on the way very, very soon, to be honest. Your tweet's in. We'll have Sam Torrance on the podcast for you this week. Sam, 8 Ryder Cups as a player. Captained in 02 when McGinley held that putt and...
jumped into the lake.
Yeah. Was back in 2014 at Gleneagles. So saw the template. So I have it all changed since his day. Yeah, it changed quite a lot, it turns out.
Well, but there was one.
Play
He was just off instinct is really what he said.
Right.
The most interesting thing, not to give away the whole interview about Sam Torrance, that I thought was that when he was 9 years old, there was a local nine-hole golf course. It was proper nine golf holes. It wasn't pitch and putt. And he shot a 39, age 9, and went back in to tell Bob, his dad. And Bob said, nah, you're lying. There's no way. And so he marched young Sam back out to the nine-hole golf course and said, right, let's go. And Sam played the nine again and shot 39 again. And Bob said, okay, we've got something here.
Wow.
Nice story.
Lindsey Graham, the senator, played golf with Donald Trump this week and gave a report of the round to the press in which he said Trump shot a 73 when they played Trump National Golf Club in Washington. Now, it's worth pointing out that, you know, you cannot divorce whatever reporting there is of the golf round from the overall politics of the scene, and Lindsey Graham would be a kind of an erstwhile ally of Donald Trump.
Okay.
But On the front nine, he shot even par, Graham told golf.com. I shot a 41, which is good for me. He hit almost every fairway. And on the back nine, he was one over, two over at the most, which is where my hackles were raised here, because I was like, you're 73 years old. You're off a handicap of nine or whatever. If you shot one over or two over, there's no discrepancy. You know exactly what you shot.
No, it's a routine thing for him. He wasn't too sure that particular
it
day.
It was. I'm like, really? Did he? And then, and then Rand Paul, who is another one, another Republican. But Trump has his problems with Rand Paul. They disagree. Rand Paul was one of the nominees for the Republican nomination last year, and he lost out to Trump. But anyway, but he said his only quote was, "The president never loses. Didn't you know?" said Paul told CNN after the game. The president and his partner beat myself and my partner by three holes. He's a little better golfer than I am, admittedly, but we both had a good time. And
sorry, I had to get a tweet.
Is just, that you, Joe?
Just say they only had a good time. Yeah.
But they had a good time. But admittedly, we both had a good time. Is it me just being super cynical? But I don't believe a word of that round.
I think you're allowed to be cynical for once here.
Oh, yeah. My God.
There was some video footage. I know Rory has spoken about the snipers in the woods when the president is playing golf. It seemed there was also a couple of long lens cameras, and there was maybe a 15 footer that didn't roll in that was just picked up. And
he just gave himself.
The question was, so was that put down as a one putt or a two putt?
I'll get to some of your tweets. Very excitingly, James Sheehan at Badger1978 is very keen over in the States to point out that the Catholics played the Prods again. Remember this?
Oh, last year.
Yeah, it's their little group.
Oh, yeah.
And I went on to meet James in Chicago.
And?
I mean, he's a great guy, but he was very excited about the Catholics beating the Prods. So
was it the first thing he asked you? Are you on the Catholics or the Prods team?
No, I'm strongly atheist, but I mean, obviously, I'm up for the Catholics just for
because it's
historical reasons.
Yeah,
you know, it'd be weird to be up for the Prods. Mm. So they've had their
Prods show.
2017.
This is awkward now.
Huh?
My family are Protestants.
Are they?
I just hope they don't beat the Catholics in the golf. But I love all religions.
The Murphys of
no, not the Murphys. My wife, my children.
Oh, sorry.
But it's fine.
Are Protestants? Fine. Are they?
Yeah.
I've no problem
delighted
with that.
Them. Delighted for them.
What's your wife's maiden name?
Gets them into
name?
The school.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, right. What's your wife's maiden name?
Mullock.
Oh.
A very Protestant name.
Scottish.
Is it?
Yeah, it sounds Scottish.
I don't know. Anyway.
Anyway.
Video gold, people.
The 2017 Catholics versus Prods. See, these lads are all mates. It's a great thing. It's a real postmodern way of Catholics and Protestants from Ireland interacting. I.e., they like each other and they're all good friends and having a good time. But they're still acknowledging the
their differences.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, let's not go...
They were like the Dubs against the Culchies.
Yeah, let's not pretend there isn't a difference. So James Sheehan can report that once again the Catholics prevailed over the Prods. Largest margin ever. Cross-border cup is home. There you go. Very exciting news for the Catholics. There's a picture of them with their cup. They take this seriously.
Where did they play?
Yeah, I was just saying, where did they play?
Lauderdale.
I'd say the Protestants pay for the trophy.
Con Finnegan then sent a beautiful picture. They're in Albufeira in Portugal. Myself and Paulie spreading the joy about the pod. Danny Finnegan tweeted in on the 18th of October. He hopes Tiger doesn't tee it up again until March or April competitively. If he goes to Augusta 100% fit, he can win. We've seen older people do it. About 8 hours after that, Danny said, "I'd like to call bullshit in my own tweet. Tiger will be 42 at Augusta. Only person older is Jack. Tiger has no hope and should retire." It's quite the turnaround.
Well, the way he even calls them older people.
Yeah.
And includes them. Like, that's Tiger now.
Yeah. Mm. And Fionn.
And me. Yeah.
On your Champions Tour.
I am 1 year off the Champions Tour, for sure.
Well, you've got to make hay in those first 3-4 years in the Champions Tour.
Otherwise, yeah, absolutely.
Vincent Hayes was listening during a 4-day hike through the Cordillera Blanca range.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Where's that?
Spain, I guess.
Welcome distraction from the lack of oxygen, he says. # friend of the pod. Mark Sheehan, lads, will there be a pod this week? There's nothing much to discuss, just that Tiger is back! ! Fergal O'Shea, only getting to listen to Golf Weekly NT now, but on the bright side, that'll mean 2 in 1 week, friend of the pod. Wally Cummins was listening to last week's pod during the drive home in heavy traffic when he heard he won the 4-ball. Happy days. It's a nice moment for Wally.
Yeah, congrats, Wally.
Congrats, Wally. Eamon Ryan, love the pod. Played our annual Ireland versus Scotland Ryder last weekend. Dundonald, the Western Gaelies, and the Glasgow Gaels. Gaels or Gaelies? Either way, it's Team Scotland getting in touch with us.
Okay.
Which is nice.
The Dundonald Lynx. had the Scottish Open there, haven't they?
Sounds familiar. John Daly, not the John Daly. Hi guys, what the diddly idly fuck is happening to the Euro Tour app? Android users still not getting the show. Horrendous. I presume when he says the Euro Tour app, he doesn't actually mean the Euro Tour.
No, the European Tour. Tour. They had big problems with the European Tour. Admitted they had a huge problem with the app.
So we went back.
We grilled Dave Peltz over it.
And with Dave Peltz.
Dave Peltz. No.
Who? What's his name?
The golf guru.
I don't know what.
The putting guru.
Keith Pelly.
Keith Pelly. Wow. We're all Dave Pelly. He's a putting coach.
Dave Peltz. This is going to be far better when it's all being broadcast on TV. Dave Peltz is with us. Huh? Dave, what is the story with the app? It's an absolute disgrace.
Where did Dave Peltz come from?
I don't know.
I don't know if we're ready for Golf Weekly Live.
The amount of editing that goes into this.
But what did Keith Pelly say?
Keith Pelly said, you're right to bring that up. This is with the Irish Open. You are right to bring that up. And let me tell you, we were messed about by the people we employed to do the job.
Yeah.
I promise you, in a month, this is going to be sorted out full stop. And if it's not, you come back and you have a go at me. A month later, there was a massive climb down and they had to admit the whole thing had not worked and they've gone back to the original. But I don't know why it wouldn't be working on an Android if they gone back.
Maybe you need
original.
To update the app.
Yeah, try update it. Delete it and update it again because they have gone back to the original. Right, very quickly then, because we've other stuff to get to. Brian Smith enjoyed the thought of Brian O'Driscoll shanking the ball on the range next to a pro. And he added, you always brighten up my Friday morning listening on the way to work in rainy Scotland. And Nathan, he was listening on his radio, car radio. He had the podcast beaming through there, which we were talking about last week.
Were we?
We were saying it doesn't work in our cars.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Works on Brian Smith's car, yeah. Derek Maher enjoyed that insight on the Dunhill with Brian O'Driscoll on the pod last week, lads. Joe Dwyer was listening to the pod at Pestana Golf Club, Portugal. Sure beats losing two plug balls in the monthly medal at home.
I have a good Brian O'Driscoll anecdote from not this year's Dunhill, but from last year's Dunhill.
Is it broadcastable?
Yeah, yeah. So Paul, who we mentioned on the pod, the sculptor, golf sculptor,
yeah,
was at the Dunhill Links doing, and because he's not a golfer and he's not a celebrity, so it's easy when you're around that world, like, to kind of feel like you're on the outside looking in, or you feel a bit uncomfortable, like, ooh, do I belong in this conversation? Even though Paul would know a lot of the people.
Mm.
And they were in the Jigger. So, you know, the tiny little pub.
Yeah.
And there was a good few people. So all the kind of the great and the good that you'd expect to be at the Dunhill Links were there, including some of the players, obviously. And they were in a group. And O'Driscoll was there. And, of course, Brian is, you know, who doesn't want to have a chat with Brian O'Driscoll? But Paul made the point and said that Brian O'Driscoll was the only one of the group. And Paul was kind of standing. You know when you're standing and I'm just slightly outside the circle and your head's kind of poking through, but there's a part of you that feels, I'm not really part of this conversation. Well, O'Driscoll was the only one who noticed and opened the circle to include Paul and said, oh, sorry, sorry, and then asked him a question and almost like he instinctively understood, just like, oh, that was a bit rude, so let's not be rude. And that was it. There was nothing more. But I remember Paul said it to me afterwards. He goes, he doesn't realise that it made all the difference. It was one of the nicest things.
Oh, that's a nice
story. It was a lovely thing. And yeah, and it really showed, and by way of just illustrating that what it takes so little to be aware of what's going on. And I just thought it was a lovely little...
Nice bit of humanity, empathy.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a very genuinely great fella.
It's a very nice story, Con, but it does raise the question, who were the other assholes in that group
really
who didn't turn around?
I know some names, I can tell you.
We'll get those names shortly. So somebody else, so enjoy your golf in Portugal, Joe, we don't hate you. Alan Murray, that feeling waking up on a wet, windy Friday and finding a pod for the drive to work. He was very happy. He had Napoleon Dynamite saying sweet, as his name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jay O'Reilly, great pod this week. You can't be wealthy if you spend it all on golf, though, because we were bemoaning our lack of wealth. And he showed his garage, which had lots of equipment.
Oh, yeah.
He'd spent too much money in his life, Jay, on golf equipment. I wouldn't like to know how much I've spent. And finally then, we mentioned Hog's Head last week as well. Jonathan Lee, lucky enough to get a chance to play Hog's Head, to say it's at another level is an understatement. So it seems like this Hog's Head is the business.
We would go.
We will review it for you. It's in Kerry, going to be uber exclusive, members only. Down in Kerry. It's the next big
type of place. Type of place you'd arrive in some Thursday and go, I was just down there playing yesterday.
Yeah. Don't make that face, because you're going to be the first of the three of us to play it.
I stayed there. I stayed there for the last three nights.
Okay, we've got much to talk about.
Mm.
The latest, by the way, in the golf on at the moment over in the PGA Tour is that Justin Thomas is living up to his billing as pre-tournament favourite. They're over in Korea. He shot a 63 in the first round, 78-man event. Purse is $7.8 million. The winner gets $1.3 million. So Justin Thomas is there. Pat Perez was the big story last week in Kuala Lumpur, who won the CIMB Classic with a near-record score of 24 under par. That's Pat Perez, aged 41. His second win on the PGA Tour in 11 months, the third of his career. What Perez said afterwards was, I'm still not going to work out. I'll still have a bad diet. I'm going to enjoy myself. I have a group of friends and that kind of stuff. I'm really not going to change anything. I'm just going to take it a day at a time. I really am. And they said, but Pat, how did you prepare for the event? I didn't really do anything. I watched the President's Cup and I drank a lot that week. I also ate a lot. I'd planned to hit balls Friday last week, once for a couple of hours. But then we drank and I played with the PXG owner, Mr. Parsons. I didn't really know what to expect when I came over here. So Pat Perez, he's putting in little effort and getting maximum return. Pat Perez, by the way, is now number 50 on the all-time PGA Tour earnings list.
That's $22 million.
That's $22 million Pat Perez has won. And he just drinks a lot and eats a lot.
He's a really interesting character in that he's not your typical run-of-the-mill PGA Tour pro, as you can read. Yeah. He was dropped. He got injured. He had to have a back injury. He had to have surgery last year. So his contract was up with Callaway, and Callaway, he says, dropped him as he was preparing to return from injury, and this was his motivation to come back and win, to stick it to the Callaway men. Now, Callaway said, no, we offered him a sort of a deal to continue. Yeah. But this was pretty much his sole motivation, was to prove Callaway wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. In his high school year, he was the only senior on the, in his college year, he was the only senior on the team, and he was comfortably the best golfer, but they had to drop him because they decided for pretty much all these young players coming through, he was not a good example.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Didn't want him around.
Does it expose maybe what is potentially a myth about the need to work out as much as the PGA Tour players seem to think they have to do? Like, aren't they not all over working out, really?
But can you take that risk?
That's a fair question. I wouldn't. If I was in the top 20 in the world, I'd be working out because
maybe
just
if Pat
case.
Perez did work out, he'd have won three majors.
That is a fair point. Perez says, I'm learning how to play the game, learning how to play my own game and stay within myself, that kind of stuff. It's taken me a long time to get there. Like you said, he said to the interviewer, I'm a late bloomer. So go Pat Perez. It's good to see someone like that win.
John Daly, 1991. That's what it's like, isn't it?
He hangs around a lot with John Daly.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
In fairness.
Steve Elkington.
I ate a lot. I drink a lot.
Yeah. Didn't John Daly showed up? He was late call up for the PGA. Was it the PGA one? USO?
Yeah, USPGA. And, 91, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then he went on the rip thinking that, sure.
Well, he only got the call the night before.
Yeah.
Because he was third or fourth Daly on the call-up list.
Yeah.
And so one, two and three, there were three dropouts and you kind of think, that's about standard, that's about tops, especially for a major. And then fourth happened all practically overnight. So I think he drove through most of the night Daly for his first round and played that morning. He didn't even have an afternoon start. If you could look up the guy's name, Fionn, whoever the guy who pulled out was a very well-known golfer. Like, we'd all know his name as soon as you look it up. He offered Daly his caddy. So he said, use my caddy, he's good. And he's walked the course all week. He knows it. And Daly has since talked about just how good this caddy was. Just like absolute certainty. You know, he said, any caddy worth your salt gets to know your yardage is within three or four or five holes. So, you know, they got through the first five or six holes and then he was just saying, this caddy just kept me on track all week, made all the difference. But it was a really nice gesture of the pro who couldn't make the major to say, take my caddy. We'll get his name in a sec anyway.
Yeah,
I'd love to know Harrington's thoughts on someone like Pat Perez.
I mean, because in the end, you kind of think Pat Perez is the exception that proves the rule. So he didn't win because he drank and doesn't work out.
I know.
He won in spite of it. But like still, you know, it's... I'm just reading it here. He's the ninth alternate, John.
Ninth?
Was.
I said third or fourth.
Ninth alternate. I'd never heard of him, says Ken Anderson, the PGA's czar of the alternates list. I had to go look him up in a PGA Tour player guide so I'd know what he looked like in case I had to go find him and get him registered.
Yeah, it's so nuts.
Yeah, and legend has it that Daly drove all night from his home in Memphis to get to Crooked Stick, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Ugh. And Nick Price withdrew.
Nick Price. Nick Price.
Due to the impending birth of his first child, Gregory.
That's right. And Nick Price gave him the caddy. Touch of class from Pricey. Wow. Tiger Woods then. Tiger.
He's back. I mean, his
he's back.
Steinberg has said that Tiger has got a very nice report, and so he is allowed to proceed. I mean, here's the interesting thing. This is the key line from Steinberg. He can do as much as he needs to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's only 3 weeks since the President's Cup, where the very last answer was, yeah, I guess I have had to sort of come to terms with the fact that I may never play again. And what are you hitting? I'm hitting 60 yards. Yeah. You've seen the video.
Yeah.
But there's been a new video now every week where he's gone from 60 yards to 160 yards to driver.
Yeah.
And it all looks very smooth.
It looks smooth.
I saw Stephanie Wee, the golf journalist, tweet of the driver shot. And I guess I could see what she meant to a point. She must have had back trouble herself because she said, I know that swing so well. And if she said, if you watch the finish, he's still protecting the back. Now, I think it'll be a long time before Tiger Woods ever swings and doesn't protect his back because his brain is now so wired to expecting pain. Like, you know, when you come back off a football injury and people say, oh, say it's a broken leg or a bad leg, you'll have to get a tackle you're not expecting and ride the tackle and then go, oh, okay, that's great news. Golf's so different because he has to force himself to swing the way he used to swing, and his brain's just not going to let him do that for a long time. That's what scuppered Justin Johnson for a lot of this year. So it looked okay. I mean, I really wouldn't get excited.
No, it doesn't look like a swing you could take into competition.
No.
No, but it's also, I mean, Tiger's smart, Mark Steinberg's smart. Under promise, over deliver. That's the tactic.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Then stop putting out the videos. I feel like that's over promising.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's like, there is nobody like Tiger for hype because automatically you start thinking, maybe. Yeah. Just maybe. But then, what is maybe? What is success? Is, when it was at its worst, we kind of thought, oh, it'd be just good to see him come back competing.
Yeah.
And now you're like, nah, I want to see him competing to win. I want to see him competing to win majors.
Yeah.
And we're still 100 million miles away from getting into, well, the chipping yips.
Yeah.
When he actually gets back playing.
Yeah.
Are they gone?
Yeah. Fair point. I didn't enjoy the last version of Tiger at all. I found it very boring. I never thought I'd say boring, but it became boring and I didn't think it ever would with Tiger.
The last version that there was actually a spell because, like, Dubai was,
that was exciting.
Pitiful.
Yeah.
Well, it was pitiful when he actually...
But it was kind of... You couldn't take your eyes off it.
No.
Yeah, but... I don't know. I mean, what's he likely to be able to come back and do? Drive the ball between 290 and 300 yards. Have the discipline to make sure he finds the fairway. Get it on the green one way or another, as he often could do. And then just hope the putting... Like, the putting can't ever come back to what it was, surely, at his age. It just would defy all logic. So, you know, he's not going to outpower the guys anymore he's playing against. He often doesn't find a fairway, so he could be in trouble with his approach shots. And then he's never going to putt the way he did. Like, the short game, it's just hard. I hope I'm wrong, but it's hard to imagine that ever coming back to within 80% of what it was. So that's the thing. Like, we'll talk about it and get very excited, but when you're real about it, I just can't imagine it. Maybe he gets inspired around Augusta and then magic happens. I don't know.
Yeah.
He also doesn't need to... Like, he can play the majors and not play a full schedule, you know? I mean, like, the days of a full schedule of 14, 15 events is over.
But then you're rusty.
Well, or you could be like a guy in his 40s and you prep very carefully. I mean, obviously, he always, all of these seemingly interminable comebacks of his, that he wants to come back for Torrey Pines, his tournament. But, like, Southern California is Baltic at that time.
Mm.
So come back at Phoenix. Take your time,
you
know? And then that gives you enough time. It's a couple of events. Play a bit. Get you ready for the Masters.
Steinberg said, Tiger's going to take this very, very slowly. This is good, but he plans to do it the right way. This is the last one.
Yeah. He needs a total mentality shift as well when he comes back in terms of his scheduling, which in terms of his fitness routine, which when you look at the size of his arms in those President's Cup press conferences, it looks good, but you would wonder how much time he's spending at the gym again. And also, is he going to be happy with, like, my sense of Tiger for the next 7-8 years, if he does get back fit and he gets back playing, is maybe one major in 8 years he gets to contend in, because just the way these things fall.
Yeah.
Would he be happy with that? Would he be happy with, all right, I'm out in the circuit, I have a top 10 every few weeks, but I'm not really winning tournaments, and maybe at St. Andrews, and the wind doesn't blow, or the wind does blow, and it just falls in my favour, I get to contend. Yeah.
And maybe that's enough for him. Maybe if you said to him now, you have to come back and you have to put in 7 years of being mediocre to above average to good, but you'll win one major, you'll get to 15.
It's the greatest comeback story in sports history.
I think he takes that deal. And he takes that deal. And I think, like, 15, God, that really
That's not a pretty big carrot as well to have that.
Yeah, and that makes the argument with Nicholas so much stronger from a Woods point of view. 15 just feels so much better. Like, I was just thinking about this morning. So Roger Federer has got to, is it 18 now or 20? Federer's at 18 or 19 Grand Slams. Think of the lack of depth in tennis. It is literally, for the last 20 years, been the same three guys or four guys who've made the semifinals and final, basically, with the odd outlier here and there, Del Potro 1 year, injuries, different services. And still Federer has only managed somewhere between less than 20, 18, 19, 20.
Because Nadal has got 15.
Yeah, Nadal's on 15. Like, for Woods to have got 14 in the modern era, think, considering the depth,
it's inconceivable.
Just unbelievable. That's why if he gets to 15, it's such a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
am I getting ahead of myself?
Yeah. No, I don't think he's going to win another major.
No, I don't either, to be honest.
So you can be part. Hank Haney said he had a look at the driver swing.
Oh, yeah.
He said, oh, he can win with that swing.
Did he?
Yeah, but then again, Tiger, no matter how, even when Tiger's hitting it like the worst on the range, he always looks good. Mm. He's a great range player.
Yeah, see, that's Haney presupposing that Tiger will bring that swing to actually
and also,
competitive golf.
Yeah,
it's and like, the short game. You
this
know.
Isn't 8 years ago. Like, yeah. The fields are deep, the guys are long, you know, they're going to kill him. And then the other positive thing, Davis Love, I can't remember what tournament it was, he beat Tiger having had the same lumbar surgery. And he was 51 when Tiger was still, maybe not quite at his pomp, but like still, you know, like, the best player around, and Davis Love beat him. So it's not inconceivable that Tiger can win, having had everything. He's still 10 years younger than Davis Love was. However, though, you know, it goes back to your point. The fields are deep, like, and Tiger, it's all well and good. You're watching, and that you watch that swing, and it looks so nice and smooth, and he's just ripping it down the fairway. When he has to tee it off in a competitive round, when his head all of a sudden dips 6 inches, and before you know it, his hips are firing open and he's left the club behind him and he's bailing out to the right and it's just grim.
Mm.
You know?
We'll be respectfully hopeful.
Yeah. Well, of course, because he's the best thing that ever happened in my lifetime in golf. And
just in your lifetime. To your life.
Yeah, that's it. I've never met him. He has no idea who I am, and yet he's the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, wait till this Facebook Live starts, Fionn.
Oh, yeah. And our guest is Tiger Woods.
He's at home bored playing Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Just click Skype.
I presume we could play Call of Duty against Tiger. These are the capabilities.
Have any of you played Call of Duty?
No.
About 10 years ago.
I've played a bit of Call of Duty, but I've dared once to go online and play like in the jungle that is online play. Mm-hmm. These people are animals.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. I once played FIFA online. Well, I used to play it on a semi-regular basis. But would sometimes, you know, you can just go out to
you're
the
dark horse
open,
when it comes to video games.
Come to
you?
The open world and randomly play some lad in Japan who spent the entire game abusing me.
Yeah.
What do you
with
mean?
The worst
calling
language.
Names?
Oh, or? Like there was nothing was off limits. I couldn't concentrate, I was laughing so much.
I'd say on average I lasted 25 seconds.
What are we talking about?
Call of Duty.
Oh.
Like all of a sudden a guy's like taking a shot to the back of my head and I'm like, but I'm hiding. I'm hiding in a foxhole. How can he kill me?
Do I take that out?
No.
Okay. We'll plow on. We've got to talk about the European Tour next. Okay, so the European Tour. Really the thing to mention here is it's on in Valderrama, which is a nice course. Sergio Garcia's hosting.
It's an amazing course.
Let me guess, you've played there.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It's an amazing course to watch as well.
It's... Do you know, it's one of those, there's a lot of those courses where it's like, eh, it's overblown or this isn't. Valderrama is not overblown at all. It's as beautiful as it looks and it's as amazing as people describe it.
And what's the general deal with it? Wide fairways, narrow fairways?
No, narrow fairways, but the trees.
Tree lined?
Yeah, tree lined. So, but the thing is, it's not enough to hit a fairway. You have to hit right, left, either right or left side of the fairway, because if you hit the wrong side of the fairway, you're blocked off to the green. So it's basically, even though the fairways are X wide, they're really Y wide.
Right,
because
okay.
That's your target. And it's the if you're playing well, like it's not the super longest course, there's a few holes that are quite long. But if you're not playing well, it'll kill you.
Okay.
But if you're playing well, it's the most satisfying round of golf maybe you'll ever have.
Well, that sounds good to me. Mm. Sergio Garcia is hosting, he's the favourite. John Rahm is there. John Rahm. Juice Luton, Martin Keimer's there, Shane Lowry and Padraig Harrington. Just to mention, Larry and Harrington, they're in slightly unusual positions here. heading into the Andalusia Masters, in that neither Lowry nor Harrington are assured of making the World Championship in Dubai. So Lowry is 65th on the Race to Dubai standings. Only the top 60 get in. So he needs a really good week. Harrington is 119th in the order of merit, so he'll need a seriously big week here.
I watched this for a few hours this morning.
Oh yeah, what's the latest?
Well, Sergio was leading. Very good. Certainly was an hour ago, right. And playing some brilliant golf. He's the tournament host as well.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah.
Lowry got a great pairing. He's playing with Sergio.
And Beef. He's a world player.
He missed a lot of putts.
Oh, no. This is continuing. I mean, we read out the stats last week, him and Paul Dunne, the comparison.
He's been caught by Yousse Luyten on 5-under.
Sergio has. Yeah. Sergio was doing interviews, obviously, because he's hosting, and his wife was talking, and she was saying what they do with Sergio is tell him all the time he's the best golfer in the world. She's like, I try and tell him that all the time.
What does he say?
He was doing the interview separately, so he might know she's revealed this. And she was also saying, even though he's so thrilled to have won the Masters, he's now unbelievably confident and he's desperate to win more majors. Because we were speculating last week, is he just happy to live off the one green jacket?
Yeah.
But she was saying he is absolutely poised to win 2, 3, 4 now, which is one of the things we said last year, maybe he will, which is kind of interesting.
Garcia's finished on 5-under, Larry's 1-over.
Okay.
Yeah, he was hovering around level par, 1-over
okay.
all day. And he hit a couple of really bad drives, hooked it after missing a couple of putts. And you do wonder if the putting is affecting his entire game.
It's in the way, isn't it? So we'll see how that goes. We've got Sam Torrance for you next. So Sam Torrance was on the show last week. He was over in Dublin at the 1-0 conference, but we spoke to him on Sunday evening just about his career in golf, and have a listen. Okay, so 21 European titles. He played in 706 European Tour events. His Ryder Cup exploits you're all very familiar with. He played in 8 consecutive Ryder Cup teams from 1981 through to 95. He held the winning putt in 85. He captained the side to that memorable victory in 02, which we remember courtesy of Paul McGinley's winning putt, an MBE, an OBE. Sam Torrance, that's not too bad.
Joe, you make me sound very good. Thank you.
Very impressive, yeah. Not bad from the boy from west of Glasgow, Largs, is that how it's pronounced?
That was it, yeah, seaside town.
So you're born into golf quite clearly. We're all very familiar with your late father's work, not least with Padraig Harrington. So did you take an early look at golf and say to yourself, oh, I like this, I like the feel of this?
Yeah, I mean, we moved to Rossendale in Manchester when I was 5. Right. My dad was club pro and head greenkeeper at Rutenburn in Largs. And we went from there to Rossendale, where he was head pro and greenkeeper. And that was when I started, when I was 5. I remember we went back to Largs when I was 9, but just before that, it was a 9-hole course. Mm. And I'd shot 39. And I came in and told my dad I shot 39. He never gave me a bigger bollocking in my life for lying. And he said, he took me out to the first tee. He says, right, come on, let's do it again. And I did it again, 39. So he believed me then.
Wow.
I fell in love with it very early on.
You shot a 39 at 9.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just disgusting for the rest of us, actually. So, and had Bob been coaching you up to that point, or was that just you naturally feeling?
He'd been having a look at me, just whacking the ball. And he told me at a very young age to do as big a shoulder turn as I could and hit it as far as we could, and we'd straighten it up later.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, he's gone now and he never really straightened it up.
So at 9, are you thinking, God, if I can keep doing this for the rest of my life, I'm very happy? Because I saw a quote from you where you said, even at 9 years of age, you were thinking, you were starting your swing at the top of your swing, almost thinking...
That's right. Good, Joe. Very good. That's actually true. I mean, I was on the range at Rossendale. And in my simple little mind, you know, you've got to swing the club back to get it into the perfect position at the top. I thought, well, I'm going to be the first one who's just going to start from the top. Of course, it lasted about 5 minutes, but it was in my head then. I never forgot it.
Yeah. It's an age-old drill, this start from the top. And Hideki Matsuyama is not far off actually trying to do it this stage.
Yeah, it's just that he's got a wonderful pause at the top.
Yeah.
Well, it makes it look like that, yeah.
Did your father then work with you very intensely, Sam, or what was
relationship? Yeah, my whole life we came back to Largs, and he worked me very hard. It was great. I mean, I almost resented practice because that's what he wanted me to do all the time, 24/7, and we did.
He's obviously an incredibly famous coach and renowned, and Ben Hogan was a hero of his. Isn't it right that he would go over and visit Hogan in Texas and talk to him on occasion?
Yeah, very, very much so. He went twice to Hogan's home, which was kind of unheard of, to see the great man. And he saw my father twice. It was the highlight of my dad's life, actually.
Yeah. Did your dad then have like a philosophy where everyone who came to Bob Torrance had a Bob Torrance swing, or did he try?
No, absolutely not. No, he had a great eye for the game. My dad, he never taught a method, and he always said, how could you teach Ian Woosnam and Nick Valder to play the same? You know, they're both 1'6", 1'5".
Yeah.
He had basics, you know. He was a great leg man, and he believed the game started from the ground up, meaning your feet, which is kind of gone in the game now. You know, you watch the great players now, McElroy, and they've got big wide stances, and their feet are virtually planted on the ground. But in the days we're talking about, we used wooden-headed clubs, and you really had to create the power.
Yeah.
Whereas with the metal heads and shafts and ball and the way it's all combined now, it's really just giving it a good skill. Mm. You don't really need to transfer your weight and come back through. It's more about staying still.
Yeah. So you turned pro pretty young, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I was 16, 17. Went to Sunningdale to be assistant, and then for a year there, and then went on tour when I was 18.
Mm. What was that like, going on tour with men who...
Magnificent. Just magnificent. Oh, my God, the best. You know, for wanting to be a golfer your whole life from a very young age, and then all of a sudden you're going on tour. I don't think it could have got more exciting. It's a very short tour. We didn't start till after April, and we finished in September, and then we went to East Africa, so, you know, Nigeria, Kenya, and Zambia, and then we go to South Africa on a different passport and play there for 4 or 5 weeks, and then we go to the Far East for 6 weeks. And that was the exciting times, all like that, travelling there, at least. Incredible countries to see them.
We
played all around Europe. The big ones we played them was the British Open.
Yeah, sure. What was the relationship like with lads on tour then? Is it like, because
fantastic? I don't think I could count one hand probably the number of times we ate with less than six people. I mean, we always just met up at 7 o'clock, go and have a nice meal, tell stories, get ready to hear woes of the day. Everyone would have their turn and just tell stories and have a great laugh. It really was a good time.
Yeah. You ultimately have won. You won 21 European titles. Were you a practicer? Like, we know Harrington as a practicer. Were you in that mould?
I was at home, but not on tour. I never practiced on tour. My father always said to me, if you don't take it with you, you won't find it there.
Right.
And I believe that to be true.
Right.
You know, when you're working on something, your mind's not free. When you go to a tour, your mind should be free, and you're just going to play golf. You know, minor things on the range, you would just warm up and use your own swing thoughts to get yourself in the place you wanted to be, and then go and play golf.
Yeah.
But if you're actually on the range working on your swing, which my dad, in fairness, when he came on tour, started working with a lot more players, he wanted us to go and practice after the round.
Mm.
And I said to him, what for next week? And he just laughed. And it was an argument we had to the day he died. That I didn't believe in it. And he changed his mind about it. He just thought you couldn't work hard enough.
Mm.
But I felt tournament golf was more about being relaxed and being there to play in that tournament and not there working on my swing and trying to find something that you're going to try and put under the severest pressure on Saturday and Sunday. It's not conducive to the right way for me.
When you were at your best, Sam, on your best days, what were the real strengths of your game?
My driving. I was a great driver and pretty good with short irons. I was useless with 3 and 4 irons. Well, maybe 3 iron anyway, 4 iron. I wasn't great with that. I hit the ball very low, but from 6 iron in and bunker play was pretty good at all of that. The only weakness I had was my long irons, and it was because I couldn't really hit them up in the air.
Right. And on the greens, because you were one of the early exponents of the long putter.
Yeah, virtually first. Well, first, actually.
Yeah. What prompted that decision? Because I was going
to... I was sending the messages down to my hands, but they were stopping at the elbows, and I developed a twitch. Horrible thing.
Wow.
It's what it is two hands trying to work as one, and one hand involuntary taking over at impact. You know, the right hand giving a hit or the left hand giving a hit, I could be either one. And I couldn't get it in from a foot, 18 inches, and the 88, I think it was.
Right.
And I'd seen a long putter in America. Well, when I went to America with Dad to Florida, hit balls in the winter. In this pro shop, there was an Orville Moody putter there. It looked about 9 feet long. I thought, what the hell is that? I didn't have a problem at that time. It was only when I I had the problem that I remembered this putter.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever used it, but I came home after, I think it was the French Open, where I could have won the tournament by 6 or 7 shots, and I ended up missing from a foot on the last green to tie second, and it was the best golf I played, and it was I had to find a new method.
Right.
And I lengthened a putter, got on the snooker table and started with it, and went on for another 20-odd years with it.
Wow. That must be a bizarre moment the first time your hand twitches and you think, okay, that's odd.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
I know what it was. I know when the seed was planted, 1972, British Open at Muirfield. And in 1971, Lee Trevino won the Open, an Asian gentleman called Mr. Liu.
Yeah.
Finished runner-up, always doffing his cap. Well, I was walking from one green to the next tee, and he was putting on a green sort of 30 yards when I'll stop, not let him put out. And he was about a 5-foot putt, and he hit this putt, and honest to God, it was like he had a live snake in his hand. I'd never seen anything like it in my life, and it just, I don't know if that was the seed planted and it came out many years later, but that was the first time I'd seen anything like that.
Wow. I mean, you hear about that. I mean, it's the
yeah, it's horrible. I don't know. You know, and it's always baffled me because I'm very strong mentally.
Right.
And it is a mental thing. What is it? I mean, I don't know. I've never got to the bottom of it. But I found a beautiful way to putt with a long putter. Unfortunately, it got, well, I don't know. Changed to the belly. The belly putter was the one that got it all banned, and I quite agreed with the belly putter being banned, but
yeah.
I never thought my method was untoward. It was really just one-handed putting.
Yeah, because at St. Andrews the year John Daly won it, you had 3-3 putts and a 4-putt in the final round, and you finished 9th.
Yeah, that was the one Open that I could have won. That was the best I played in the Open, and it was round the loop, 7, 8, 9 and 10 that it happened, and yeah, you're right, that was the one.
And that was that a case of the? I mean, I think there was a gale.
It was
that
windy.
Day.
No, yeah. It was windy. The one thing with the long putter was it was useless in strong wind.
Right.
Because it wasn't anchored.
Okay, so you've got this bigger thing.
Just used to waft a bit of place like that.
Yeah.
Something in a storm.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. What did your dad say? I have to say about the putting.
Oh, he didn't care as long as he got in the hole. I mean, he was frustrated, but you know, he loved my game. He loved me, and to see me playing so well and struggling so much on the greens, he was delighted to see me. Well, with a method. I mean, with many exams needed, tried side saddle. Sorry.
Yeah, very famously. I mean, people have tried all sorts. It's
absolutely. There's many methods to get it in the hole, and it's a shame that the band. There's so many of my friends and people, old boys around the country that used the long putter and just rolled it up to the side of the hole and tapped it in.
Yeah.
It's a shame that that's been taken away from them.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I presume, I mean, it's a cliche to say to you, but I presume the Ryder Cup experiences are the highlights of your career. Like,
by far. Yeah, the captaincy is more than any.
What was it for you? What was it about the Ryder Cup for you, Sam?
I think when I was, what age would I be, 15 or something, when Nicklaus conceded the putt to Jacqueline, 69. And, you know, it just meant so much, and it was seen around the world as the best sporting gesture and of all time, and it just sat with me at the Ryder Cup. I really want to play in that, you know. Brian Huggett holding on the 17th green and then just going on to getting in the team.
Mm.
And I never really had much team sports at school.
Right.
Because I was a golfer at 5. And there was no other sport for me, so... I love playing with my peers. I love being in the same teams as, you know, the Sevies, all those, the Woozies and the Lyles and the Langers.
Mm.
You know, to walk on the tee with one of them is just magnificent. The team rooms, everything about it was great.
Is there any story of regarding all those great characters that jumps to mind now when you reflect on it all, or Ryder Cup in particular, that stands out for you?
Well, one of the greatest things about the Ryder Cup was getting help from these great players.
Yeah.
The funny story with Seve, you know, the thick rough around the greens, the Americans were wonderful exponents of that, and we were sort of learning it. And, you know, he'd just say, I'm really struggling with it. Hey, come on, Doug. He always called me Sam. They say, come on, Sam.
Right.
He's going to be chip. And he'd be with you there for a couple of hours. He'd be fantastic, as much as you wanted. And, of course, the Ryder Cup finished the next week at the French Open, beside the chipping green and a few chips, and Seve's walking by. Seve just still haven't quite hit his plan. And then French tells me to go somewhere, and he says, I'll see you in 2 years. Huh?
Was he a good teacher when he wanted to be a good teacher, Seve?
He was good at anything he wanted to be. Seve was magnificent.
Yeah.
sadly missed.
Yeah, for sure. I love Trevino's line to you at Walton Heath in your very first Ryder Cup.
I'm going to beat the moustache off me. He did.
In quite a nice touch, which I liked as well, you shaved your moustache off that evening as a homage to...
I still regret it, but I did. The other half of that story is when I picked him up in the morning, because it was at Walton Heath, where we had our own cars.
Yeah.
And I've come out of the hotel, and there's Trevino waiting on his courtesy car to take him to the golf course. And I said, Lee, because I loved Lee Trevino. When he played in Britain, Lee played the John Letters clubs, which is the same as me, and I actually got some practice rounds with him through John Letters. So I got to know him really well, and he was just one of the nicest people I've ever met. So he's there. I said, do you want to lift to the course? He said, sure, Sammy, let's go. So he gets in the car with me. Of course, you come out of the car park and turn right to go to the golf club. But I've turned out of the car park and turned left. And he's looked at me. He says, hey, Sammy, where are you going? I said, to hell with you, Lee. We're going to London at half a point each. And he never forgot that. It was obviously I turned round and he beat me 4-3. But he was a great man. He's a great man.
Yeah, amazing. Actually, there's a fantastic... the Open winner documentaries, which are often on Sky Sports, and his one is very good. I mean, being struck by lightning seemed to really affect his putting. Another fella who had those kind of jitters. Really curious to know, you're captain in 02, obviously, and we remember McGinley, and you know, geez, if there was a Ryder Cup where Sam Tarns didn't cry, I haven't seen it yet. So, like, amazing kind of scenes. When you go back...
The ones we lost. I never cried when we lost. You don't cry when you lose. I was only crying happy tears any time you saw me. I was never anything but ecstatic.
Yeah. When you went back at Gleneagles under McGinley, so they kind of, 12 years on, I suppose, had captaincy changed very much? And I ask that because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, the stats and everything.
I mean, Paul did an incredible job. It's like another world to me, the stats and methodical, and he never left a pebble unturned, never mind a stone unturned. He was extraordinary captain.
Yeah. So were you working off instinct by comparison?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes.
Hmm.
You deal with each. They're huge things to confront being a Ryder Cup captain, and you do it your own way. Paul is a methodical type of person.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm just grab it by the tail and hang on and see what happens and do your best.
Right. You're not a worrier.
Suzanne, my missus, taught me a saying a long time ago, and worrying is the interest you pay on the inevitable. You know, there's absolutely no point worrying about anything. You know, obviously you keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
You must never let things fester because, you know, in 3 months' time you look back and say, my God, I can't believe I was worried about that. You know, there's no point.
Yeah.
Life should be happy. I know it's tough. Life is tough and you got to worry about some things, but the less you worry, the better it is.
I'd be very interested for your perspective on the Harrington-Bob Torrance relationship and why it works so well. Because basically over here in the media, we'd have, you know, Padraig could come back and be talking about being out in the snow and Bob sitting there with him.
Yeah, well,
two madmen.
They were a match and have made in heaven.
Right.
No one could outwork my dad. No one.
Hmm.
But Padraig came close.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just ideal for both of them. They both love to work and they love to get things right. And it works magnificently for them.
Because Harrington, by his own admission, was not destined to win three majors by any means.
No, it's a wonderful compliment to my dad, yeah. And I can't say I entirely agree with it because that would be a bit rude to Padraig. But if he says it, you can't really disagree with it.
He puts it down to Torrance, hard work, hour after hour. And, I mean, I would love to be able to eavesdrop on some of their conversations. I'd say they were in-depth.
They had a lot of fun, too. They had a lot of fun. My father was a very funny man. He always kept them amused, his pupils.
Right.
And they had a ball.
What's your relationship with the game now, Sam? Do you play often?
I still play. I play 2 or 3 times a week locally. I'm playing next week, actually, in the English Masters, British Masters Seniors event, which is my second event of the year. So it's almost coming to a close. I'm finding it difficult to let go.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty rotten now, you know, compared to what I was. And that's the hardest thing to contend with, mediocrity. And that's what I am compared to what I was. So
yeah,
we shall see. I still love to play. I'll never stop playing my games at home.
That's good because a lot of tour pros when they retire they can't, as you said, very eloquently, they can't accept the mediocrity.
And they just don't want to do it. I mean, I still love the game. You know, it still fascinates me. You know, I'm still looking for the secret. I'm not going to find it, that's for sure.
Yeah. One last thought then on the current situation at the elite level of golf. I was just doing a bit of research and I saw an interview you did in 2012. And in 2012, what you said made perfect sense, because the interviewer was asking you, you know, is it going to be Tiger versus Rory for the next number of years? And you said, well, we'll have to see how Tiger comes back, but it's certainly going to be Rory will be the man to beat. And I appreciate he's won four majors and, you know, it's an absolutely astounding career. But I would suggest we're probably starting to worry slightly about the years slipping by, Rory, a little bit.
I wouldn't worry about that.
No?
You know, Rory's a phenomenon. What you must remember, class is forever, form is only current.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back to, say, 2014, I think 2014 was the last time he won a major, and he won two that year.
Yeah.
The British and the US, the opening the PGA. In 2015, he got that horrific injury, missed the British Open with football stuff. And kind of wiped that year off, down to not just that, but just difficult to get everything right. And then 2016, he won the FedEx Cup. You know, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this year was not his best year at all. It was lots of near misses, but he got very happily married. And the game seemed to be coming together. With, you know, Dunlop British Masters, he came close to winning that, and lots of good signs. I have no doubts whatsoever Rory McIlroy will be back and winning many tournaments.
He said this week his plan is to go down as the best international player, which means, in his head, beating Gary Player's nine majors. Can he do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He can do anything, Rory, with that game. You know, it's just, he's learning every year. His course management seems to be his biggest letdown to me. But that's a very fine eye looking at it and picking at it. You know, he's got such a good game. Why would you not be aggressive all the time?
Yeah.
I just think maybe just draw the strings in a wee bit on certain holes. You know, he's got so much power there. He doesn't need to go. But each year, I think he'll get better. And yes, he's going to win more wages. No question in my book.
Yeah. Do you worry do you worry about his putting, Sam?
His putting? No. No. He's worked a fair bit on his putting. Mm. I don't think his putting's... With great players, they always look like mediocre putters because they hit so many greens.
Yeah.
You know, like you look at Jordan Spieth, who misses a lot of greens and chips and putts like God. You know, and he looks like the greatest putter in the world, but actually he's quite fallible on the greens.
Mm.
You know, I'd be more worried about his putting, funnily enough, than it would be at Rory McIlroy's, with the, you know, the head pointing at all, or is it not pointing at all? And
interesting.
But Rory's, you know, he's as fit as a butcher's dog. He can handle anything. He's been through the utmost stress in the game and come through with flying colours.
Yeah.
I see no problems.
You first came across him when he was 14, isn't that right?
Yeah. He came and stayed here for a week, fed him a son. I always tell my son that I thought Daniel was better than him at that age, but then Daniel keeps telling me, Dad, he was 33 under par for the five rounds he played at Sunningdale.
Oh my God.
You know, only a dad could see
the
other side of it.
And Rory at 14, was he kind of destined?
Oh, magnificent. He was the straightest hitter. He wasn't as long, obviously not as long then as he is now. He wasn't long at all then. But I've never seen anyone hit the ball straighter.
Right.
You know, it was and this beautiful big shoulder turn as he still had.
Yeah. Lovely having you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
There you go, Sam Torrance.
He's very much from that era of sports people that we will never have again, of incredible fame. I think everybody in Ireland knows who Sam Torrance is.
Because
despite
the channel situation.
Because of the channel situation.
Yeah.
Despite not having the most incredible career of European Tour players of that era.
20 European Tour wins, but only, I mean, a top 10 finish at two majors is the height of it. Like, it's the Ryder Cup stuff, and it's the mustache, and he's a bit of a messer. Also a bit gruff at the same time. He's both incredibly gruff and then can be a messer and pull funny faces, Sam Torrance. So it's good to have him on. Seems to be handling reasonably well that whole notion of still loving golf and having to accept he's crap at it now by his own standards. which a lot of pros can't do. So it seems it's good he's still playing 3-4 times a week. And we know plenty of pros who just say, oh, I'm not playing anymore because it's, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Any final thoughts before we head on?
I'm just back from the Czech Republic.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Did I tell you? Oh, well, the listeners don't know this. So the morning I left, I flew out to the Czech Republic. I'd watch, you know, on your Twitter feed, it comes up. So it had been 20 years since Patrick Berger scored a superb hat trick against Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And so so I fly out to the Czech Republic, and the first golf course we go to is Albatross, which is the host of the Czech Masters. We walk into the clubhouse, and who's sitting in the bar? Patrick Berger. So I went over, nicest guy. Now, non-football fans might know, Czech footballer, played nice for Liverpool, left foot. Really beautiful, yeah. Cultured left foot.
Good hair in his day.
Oh,
just really
more
beautiful.
Handsome now than he even was back then.
Me and Nathan, you came over and showed me the picture of you with Patrick Berger, and I initially, just because it was the week of the Dunhill Links, and I looked at the picture and thought, that's Jamie Dornan. Why? Maybe Fionn's gone over to the Dunhill. He looked a lot like Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, exactly what I thought
like
as
Jamie
well.
Dornan. But he, so I said to him, I just watched a YouTube clip of you scoring a hat trick against Chelsea, and he goes, yeah, 20 years ago today.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is unlike other, whatever, big time football, like he had the time to sit down, chatted away, wanted to know what we were doing. I was nominally over there to play a few rounds of golf and to, from my travel hat on, is this idea of promoting the Czech Republic as a golf destination. It's actually really good. The golf is not expensive. The beer is super cheap. Like you can get a pint for like a quid. Or a euro,
mm-hmm.
And really beautiful, like okay. Some really good golf courses. And
interesting.
The Sean O'Rourke podcast is available.
Yeah,
the Sean O'Rourke.
Saw that, yeah.
Oh yeah. So I talked about it yesterday.
Traitor.
Well, I thought because you guys are so bitter about that, you wouldn't give me more than like I feel like you're looking at me with the eyes going, shut up about talking.
No,
about
I'll talk more to you about Czech Republic another time. Nathan has to run off and do an interview.
Oh yeah,
for,
do an
off
interview. Anyway, but that was that. So Czech Republic.
That's interesting because
how cheap is cheap?
Yeah. What are we talking?
So. In the top course, so Albatross, or the host of the Czech Masters, so the equivalent would be, say, a Killeen Castle here.
Or Lutchlestown.
Or Lutchlestown Castle. No, yeah.
Yeah, no, go on.
It was 50 euro Monday to Thursday.
Oh, right, okay.
For 18 holes, and I think it's 75 euro Thursday to Sunday. So the weekend rates. Really affordable. And also you think, the Czech Republic isn't the most developed golf destination. I played a Gary Player course, Chelny, I can't pronounce it properly. Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, hills that you need like grappling hooks to get up. But I kept laughing. This is classic Gary Player testing the fitness of everybody who plays there. Come on, get up.
Gary Player should have a video.
And I wonder if Gary Player's even been
the
there.
The changing rooms.
Oh yeah.
Of every little fitness tip before you go out.
But really impressive.
Look at that belly.
Really impressive. Like really and good quality long courses. You can play them, and they're keen because. They're playing catch up.
Yeah.
They're keen to emphasize that they've developed all of this. Like, for example, at the par threes at another course I played outside Karlovy Vary, they have like, they measure the distance to the par three every day and it comes up on a neon scoreboard.
I saw that, picture, the electronic scoreboard.
Yeah, so the electronic scoreboard. So it's like, whatever, it's a bit of a gimmick, but it's a useful little thing.
Yeah,
I've never seen that anywhere else.
No, it's good.
So, you know.
Czech Republic and golf.
I mean, go in summertime. You
know. The whole world is just after that golf money.
That's it.
You know what I mean? If you're going to establish yourself as a golf destination.
Yeah.
And I presume the weather in the Czech Republic is good.
In the summertime, your man, the manager at was telling me, oh no, we had 50 days in a row where it was 30 plus degrees.
Okay.
So fine. It's like, the idea is, it's like, look, it's like southern Spain.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
Yeah, sold.
I'd go.
Okay, let's do it. We've got a few things to do. Actually, the Peltz school were in touch after Bernard Driscoll was on last week. And
the Peltz school who...
The Pelly School.
In Killeen, yeah.
To apologise about the European Tour.
The app, yeah. So we'll go down and we'll have a few words with them about the app, but then they want us to go down and maybe do a podcast. Brian is up for going down as well to straighten out his short game.
Can I meet Brian O'Driscoll once?
It depends.
I've never met him.
If you're going to be cool about it,
yeah.
I am not going to be cool about it.
Don't be weird.
Don't be weird.
Be cool about
but it.
It
would be cool to record a podcast, record some of the lessons across the day, and so we might do that. We're pretty much done. Thanks, Nathan.
Cheers.
Thanks, Fionn.
Thanks, Joe.
And thank you, listeners. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.